Today, we're back, Grace and I, for a very special episode of the Life of an Empath podcast. Today, we must discuss, it is our obligation to add thoughts and voice to everything that's going on in the world. Grace, what has happened since we last discussed the Rona realness?
I mean, the question I think might be like, what hasn't happened? There's been a lot of turmoil in the world, but I think what we're really dealing with is a lot of different levels of reopening of various states. We've got some states that are partially open, that have an opening plan, that are trying to figure out ways to reignite the economy and to basically get people back outside. However, with that in mind, right, testing is not that much better, sadly. So we've got a little bit of a mismatch, right? We have a desire to somehow find a type of normalcy, but we don't have established practices around mask wearing, around like effective social distancing, and there's still not much movement in testing. And, you know, folks are still actively wanting a virus vaccine or some sort of medical protocol for decreasing the impacts and effects of COVID-19, but there's still a lot of fear and trepidation, rightfully so, if you ask me, around what a vaccine looks like, how a vaccine would be distributed, who would even be eligible for such a vaccine. The same things that always happen when there's ever any kind of medical intervention or innovation, right? The fear of who will be first, especially because traditionally there's been when it comes to vaccinations and the development of them, there have definitely been some privilege baked into who gets tested, who's a part of the trial and error for that vaccination, and then who ultimately receives the finished and good and whole and full product. And, you know, I think that that is an interesting backdrop to the topics we're going to be discussing today.
It is, for sure. I think it has been just as chaotic in terms of the reopening of the states and the reopening of businesses as it was in the shutting down of them and the whole shelter in place process. The organization has not improved. I don't know that's necessarily gotten worse, but there's just nothing that has really changed to give us a sense of unity as the United States in terms of tackling this pandemic or trying to align ourselves on a distinct path together with this. You know, we keep seeing these things everywhere you go, even gifts on, you know, Instagram. You know, we're alone together, but it doesn't really feel like we're together because, you know, this business is open, that business is open, this state is open, that state is open. It's funny, and really thinking about the states opening, and they're all doing it at different times because it's summer now. Right now we're in the summer and people want to go places, and if they can't fly, they want to drive road trips and visit people and whatnot. And you don't even know if you cross a state line what you're going to encounter if you travel into another state. And I just think that it's really like we've been afforded no sense of comfort or just security. I mean, I understand that this is definitely unprecedented, right? But we still should be able to have something that we can feel unified in as the citizens of a country, and that just like has not happened. I don't feel like testing is anywhere near where it needs to be. And I see, you know, different celebrities on, you know, social media still getting the test and still saying, okay, well, you know, don't get mad at me because this state has free testing for everyone, or, you know, but the anger is coming from, you know, viewing that from a state that doesn't include that. And I think that that is just, I feel like it's just the separation that we always find ourselves in the U.S. Like, there's always this sense of separation, like, you know, whether it's in the health industry, whether it's in, you know, I don't know, like, all of, we're always experiencing the separation, whether it's racial, whether it's health, whether it's business, whether it's class, whether it's, there's always something that seems outside of your reach. And that is the thing that becomes the most upsetting. And that is the thing that always puts us in this next level of chaos. And this next level of disaster, and this next level of whatever, you know, you want to describe it as. So, but now that we do have that recap on the coronavirus, which basically suggests that we are still nowhere in it, we have no really foreseeable future or, you know, positive prognosis for it, if you will. But we can't obviously can't do this episode without focusing and centering our attention and our thoughts and our spirit on the fact that there is an actual race war going on in this world at this very moment. And the pandemic is serving as a backdrop to spotlight this racial injustice in the United States and worldwide. So, I mean, where do you even begin? Like, where do we begin in discussing this? Like,
I think that starting off with Corona is actually a great physical representation of the mental and spiritual position we find ourselves in when it comes to especially the topic of race. Something that I've been mulling over when you told me we were gonna do this podcast, and I was like, absolutely, we're gonna do this podcast, is all the videos that I was seeing earlier when people were showing you what it looks like to A, be asymptomatic, and B, to unknowingly spread corona. Like, you know, there is that one doctor or healthcare provider, and she had gloves on and she touched like black ink and water, and then she like touched her face, and then she like touched something else to show kids how the coronavirus can very easily spread even when quote unquote you're clean or quote unquote you wear gloves. And I actually think that that is the perfect analogy for racial injustice around the world, but especially the United States. I think thinking of race in that way, or thinking of racism in that way, to me, I mean, I honestly just made the mental connection like a couple of days ago, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is just like Corona, because a lot of what the disease, the virus, asks us to do is to safeguard other people. The thing about Corona is you can be perfectly healthy, or you could even be asymptomatic, but you wearing a mask for your neighbor. You're not wearing the mask for you. You're not breathing in your own oxygen because you like it. You have put on this mask, or you have washed your hands, or you have used a sanitizer in order to safeguard the people around you, especially those most vulnerable. And we already saw people struggling with the idea of foregoing personal liberty for the collective good, for the literal perseverance and like and preservation of human life that was not theirs. Corona has called for a higher order, the order it always should have been, right? This idea that it's not about you, it's about the collective we. And I think that that is something that a lot of people have really struggled with. And it takes us right into the current racial climate, this race war that we are effectively in. And so I don't know about you, but like for me, that's been something that's not been lost on me. Some people are maybe not making those connections, but I know that, especially as of last week. So today is June 2nd, 2020. I'm going to do a digital timestamp with my voice. As of last week, Memorial Day, I realized that I was like, oh, not that I didn't know we had an epidemic on our hands. I was like, but we got another pandemic going on that people always struggle to have articulate and empathetic and open conversations around.
Right, right, for sure. Memorial Day 2020 with George Floyd, obviously his murder is a visual that you just can't unsee. For the people that were able to watch the video and for the people that have seen the video in its full length, you can't unsee that. That is going to be something that has been really huge in where we are now today, what, like a week later, right? But this is also something that Black people have been very accustomed to experiencing, you know, in terms of the other Black people that have been murdered or killed before them, you know, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Orlando Castile, Amadou Diallo, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor. There's just so many.
The list just goes on. Like, if we were to write down the names of people who have been unarmed Black people who have been killed in police custody or as a result of interactions with police, the list could like probably wrap around this entire country. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's just it's alarming. And these are a few of many names, right? And I think that like, for me, that's what's been so interesting. And I think something you say that, you know, my parents actually also say this a lot that I think is absolutely spot on, is that there is a timing for and an order to everything. And before, I mean, exactly the murder of George Floyd, we had like the very day before the Amy Cooper incident.
We have to talk about Amy
Cooper. We got to talk about Amy Cooper.
We got to talk about Amy Cooper, because I would say, like, literally, I believe that sometimes, you know, things just work together in a way that you would have never imagined that they could work together so well and at the same time so horribly, because Amy Cooper and that whole scene was such a disaster. And I know that people have described this, and there's been so many pieces that instantly came out about this, you know, but I think the big thing that has been said is, you know, about her weaponization of the police. But the thing that seems most relevant to me is that Amy Cooper is just a meme for how white women in this country weaponize everything. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And in many things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they at work, right? How many times have you been at work and, you know, somebody has weaponized, you know, your white supervisor against mm-hmm. you? How many times have you been in a meeting and, you know, your white coworker has weaponized their tears against you? Like, it was just such a I don't know, like, I'm not sure why people are focused on the police, but this behavior has been seen in many different settings. Like, it's, yeah.
Exactly. And for those of you who, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure how you would not know about Amy Cooper, but I'm not judging, because maybe you're taking time away from the television or social media. So it is possible. But for those of you who are like, well, who's Amy Cooper and why does this matter to this greater conversation about racial injustice in our country? Amy Cooper is a person who apparently lives in New York City, but she was in a part of Central Park, which I think, is it called the Bramble?
The Ramble.
The Ramble. Okay. Cause I was like, is it Bramble or Ramble? And there was an African-American gentleman who His name actually, I believe, is Christopher Cooper, and he is not related to Amy Cooper. They just happen to have the same surname. And he was bird watching. He's an avid birder, which that's a very common practice, especially in places where you've got the proper landscape to do so. It's a delightful activity. And he was minding his own business, birding, enjoying his day off, right, at the park, socially distancing, doing what he needed to do for his good mental health and self-care, as well as physical health. And he politely asked Amy to leash her dog because the ramble is a leashed area. You're not to have pets off leash because they could harm any of the flora or fauna. So Amy proceeded to engage in the kind of anger that is just not needed for such a situation. And she yelled at him to turn off his camera, and he was like, I will not, because he understood, because Christopher Cooper, as an African-American person in the United
States, Christian,
recognized that you need evidence. And this is going to actually really reinforce what we're talking about the weaponization of, Caucasian superiors and Caucasian tears in the battle just for equality and to be seen. But he began recording because he understood that he needed proof or evidence that he did not harm this white woman. And I think that that is like the first red flag on the play. The fact that we understand that we have actually got to record it. It has to be live. It has to be streamed somewhere, or it has to be able to be shared widely for people to even recognize the humanity within us. So he began to record, and Amy Cooper proceeded to have the kind of tirade that is not only disheartening, but dangerous and alarming. And she was like, turn off the camera. When he said no, she was like, if you don't turn off this camera, I'm going to call the police and tell them that an African-American man is threatening my life. The fact that she took the time to inject African-American let us know that she knew exactly the playbook that she was about to run. And she yanked up her poor defenseless dog, who was, by the way, yelping, squirming, trying to get away from her, because no one should yank up any living being like that, and was dragging him around with her while she was calling the police. And as soon as she called the police, tears magically appeared from the corners of her eyeballs. And she said that an African-American man at the park was threatening her and her dog's life. When I say Chris Cooper didn't do any of the above, you can watch the video for yourself and, ascertain that. He never threatened her. He never even raised his voice, except for when she was getting too close. And he was like, ma'am, back up. Like, please maintain your distance, right? Because we're still in the middle of a global pandemic. Don't get it confused. We still should be maintaining space with people who we do not live with. And she proceeded to call the police and lie. Full-faced, boldly, loudly, with confidence and authenticity. And I think that that's where the conversation really, really begins. Not for many Black Americans. We, or even Black people around the world, I think that this is actually a universal that we all understand and share in, for many of us living in, Eurocentric, nations, or even just non-Black dominant nations. And here, Amy Cooper is, this is a high-leveled power person. She's got, like, I think a VP title attached to her name, or she did. She was fired, let go from her job. But here is a person of power and position. And why does that matter? I'm gonna let Tanisha talk about this a little bit more, but because she's someone who was hiring people. She is someone who was firing people. She's someone who was promoting people. She's someone who was mentoring and coaching people. But most of all, she was in a position of power in rooms that many people do not have access to, swaying and using her bias to sway other people in positions of power. So I want y'all to remember that example I gave earlier of how the coronavirus be spreading, of how it can infect and be taken and passed on by asymptomatic people. Exactly what Amy Cooper, she is part of the ecosystem of the virus of racism. And only God knows how many people she's been touching and spreading that disease to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's so interesting, and I'm glad that you honed in on her anger, because, you know, we experience different manifestations of anger from people throughout our experience. But, you know, spiritually, you know, anger is, you know, a manifestation of the fact that you think that you have no power to change your environment or circumstances, right? That means that you have exhausted all options to engage in a solution. And that was such misplaced energy at that time. It was not an unreasonable request, since there were posted signs for someone in the community to say, hey, abide by the rules. Like, she was not powerless at all, which just really doubles down on the fact that there was prejudice, there was discrimination. Like, she did not want him to speak to her. How dare he ask her, a person like him, to engage in, you know, the rules or whatever. Like, seriously, like, anger is such deep negativity, and he did not approach her in a negative way. Like, she wasn't even giving him back what he served her in no way, shape, or form. It was just like, you know, I just want to say that because there was a very easy solution to that that did not call for her to engage the police, especially when you understand that you are dealing with someone that is a VP, right? So it's not like she's someone who wasn't educated. It's not like she was getting a request, you know, for context, with someone that was uneducated as well. This is somebody that is a Harvard graduate here, you know what I mean? And very simply asking her to, hey, see the sign, you know, let's follow the rules here, you know, let's protect our environment that we're both trying to occupy at the same time. And so I think spiritually the anger component is very important. Also, spirit says that anger is an unnecessary emotion because of the fact that it holds no solution, right? So very troubling situation, which led us directly into the situation with George Floyd. So, you know, within, was it a day or was it
a day? Within a day. A day.
Within a day, then we come with that. And, you know, since then, there has been so much call to action. I mean, the work that has had to be done just to get a single officer that was recorded for the world to see arrested. The other officers still have not been held accountable for their part in it. And there has also been, since the riots and the protesting has broken out, there have been subsequent deaths, right? There have been deaths that have come since then. But the response to George Floyd has been overwhelming. There has been an outpouring of support for the Black Lives Matter organization. But the biggest thing that has been floating in the air has been, what can we do? Mm-hmm. Right? What can we do? Have you heard that from your white friends, your white allies, counterparts?
Absolutely. I want to make a small correction before we continue. So George Floyd's murder was actually the same day as Amy Cooper. It was on Memorial Day. So I think that it came out in the news the day after, but it occurred on that, on May 25th. And yes, I think that I sent you an article before we recorded this called please read this, dear white people, or something like that. Please read this article before you text your Black friends. And the article kind of just breaks down some of the well-intentioned but misguided and misdirected energy that you know, majority people who are aware are trying to channel for change. And so, you know, I think I would call it the good fortune. Some days, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't know. I have the good fortune of calling lots of different kinds of people friends. And a lot of them happen to be of, you know, European descent. So I've been actually kind of surprised by who has texted and who hasn't. I'm using it as a little informal social experiment in my own life, just to see how people show up, when they show up, and with what they show up. But I've received the text messages. I've received, you know, the notes from colleagues. I've had people slide up into my DMs in social media. So I think that I'm in the same boat that a lot of other Black people are who work and live and occupy mixed race settings. And it's been interesting.
It's been interesting. I think I know that the people that I work with probably might deem this a little bit unexpected for me to even be talking about this topic. But I think that we are in such a time that everyone's voice and everyone's experience, especially being a Black person, is relevant into this conversation because we all have varied experiences with this. Like, one Black person's experience with racism is not another Black person's experience with racism. So all of our voices need to be highlighted in this experience. And I do want to say that, you know, I work with all different kinds of people from all over the world, you know, and I absolutely have love for all that have love for all, you know what I mean?
Amen.
So it's not a situation where it's like picking a side or anything like that. But I do want to say that this, what can we do, and these, the emails, the texts and whatnot, it really has come off as a little bit trite to me, and very disingenuous. And I feel like, you know, I'm happy that awareness is coming, right? But why did it take us sitting at home with nothing else to do and nowhere to go for us to focus on an issue that has been so huge, right? Because the same day that I made a video and posted it on Instagram, sharing my very upsetting experience with something that, with the counterfeit bill that George Floyd experienced, right? If you guys want to check out my initial thoughts on what happened about George Floyd, you can go to at _lifeofanimpact_ and check out that video. But I mean, that to me, you know, so many people that reached out to me, I guess because I was tearful and upset about it, but that was just a day in the life.
Thank you.
It was a day in the life, you know, and, you know, I got so many, I hope you're okay. And, you know, please tell me what is it that I can do and all of these things. And it's just like, if you don't know what you can do, then I'm not sure that I'm the right person that you should be asking, you know, because I just look at it like this. It's like, you know, if I know that I'm starving you, right? You're a human being. You need food, shelter, connections, right? You need the basic things to survive, right? So if I'm starving you and I know that you're hungry because I'm a human and you're a human, I need food, so you need food too, right? So am I supposed to come to you and say, well, I know that you're hungry, but what do you want me to do?
Like, we give me some food.
Like, I really don't understand this. Like, what can we do? Because it's just like, you know, we're all humans. We are all living the same type of experience. Like, we all have, you know, we're sharing a collective consciousness, right? We go to work, we take care of our families, we interact with our families, we do chores, we, you know, all of the things that, you know, we all are on email, we're all on social media, we're having the same experience. So what do you mean? What is it that you can do for me now that you're aware, you know, when this has been my experience for all the days that I have been living in this body?
And that's the thing that, like, for me, just really, I want to say it doesn't, like, work my nerves and annoy me, because I know spirit wants me to vibrate higher. But if that's a thing that has, like, it just really kind of gets to me, because my academic background is in anthropology and sociology for many reasons, mostly wrapped around my own, like, Native identity. However, with that being said, I have went out of my way to study cultures and peoples that are not natively mine. And I have found in that study of these people and their cultures, right, and not these people as in to separate them from me, but these people to recognize that their identity and their experience is different than mine, has made me and enriched my life for the better. So what really annoys me is when people say, well, what can I do? Well, what was done to get us here? And a conversation you and I had offline was, everything that was set in place to be a barrier, you must now go back to that place and dismantle. Mm-hmm. Right? So if there were economic practices put in around acquisition of loans, home ownership, paying jobs. I was talking to my mother yesterday, bless her heart. She'd been listening to me vent and rant. And I know once again, we're trying to go higher, but I was doing it. And I said to her, I am making 67 cents to a white woman's 77 cents to a white man's $1. I want 33 cents. That's what I told her. I was like, I want someone to cut me a check for 33 cents for every dollar I'm supposed to be making. And I was like, if we want to truly talk about what do we do, that's why I'm vibing with these lists, like these like 75 things white people can do right now to like make, to change, you know, and to dismantle white oppression. I'm like, yes, because a lot of the lists are focusing on the action items. They're like, call your local prosecutors and DA office. Make sure that sentencing for low-end offenses are not greater than things like, oh, I don't know, capital murder. Like, make sure that people aren't in jail for 40 years because they're three strikes, they're outlaw, and they were selling marijuana when currently people are making millions off of marijuana and cannabis industries because of what they look like. Because when the young person who happens to come from a family of means decides to start a cannabis farm, they're groundbreaking. They're entrepreneurial. But when that same person is a person of color from maybe a low-income community or the hood, they're a drug dealer. They're a thug. And while we are not dismantling or identifying the language, like I think that I've always said, you know, as a proud immigrant, as a proud American, with a diverse background, I've always said, it's been amazing to me how all of my life, and we know we're both from the rural South, so we get it. There's always been a tale of two Americas. There's always been a tale of two Americas, no matter what your lens might be, right? Some are like the haves and the have-nots. Some are like the immigrants and the non-immigrants, whatever, right? People have decided that there's two lenses. And what's so interesting about, I think, the battle for racial equality and justice is that lens is much more complicated. It's not even just like two Americas, it's like 15 Americas. And yet there is a thread that runs through the story of every Black person in this country of insecurity, of personal turmoil and pain, whether they acknowledge it or not, because some Black people don't even want to address it or talk about it because the trauma has clammed them up, or they think that if we don't talk about it, then we can elevate beyond it. But you cannot heal a wound that is festering until you wash it, until you dig it out, and until you sew it up, bandage it, and give it the right environment to heal fully. And we have not even acted like there was a wound. And so now we are in this precipice of violence and pain. And I think that it's just so interesting, right? Because people are kind of, there are people who think that the folks who are, you know, protesting shouldn't be, that they should only be calling their legislators or only peacefully protesting. And I think Trevor Noah from The Daily Show said it best, when there's no right way to protest because you are actively dissenting against your government, actively dissenting against the majority of your society. So how can there be a correct way to dissent, right? There are less harmful ways maybe, but physically harmful. Property can always be replaced. Lives cannot. And that's the thing, to bring it back to like anger and rage, you know, Spirit saying anger is an emotion that cannot serve you. No, but it can definitely be one that ruptures the reality of the group of people you're trying to speak to. Because I think that that's the thing that was so interesting about Amy Cooper. Her anger was that physical representation of the unspoken rules and laws and mores that we as people of color know. That we have always suspected, that we have sometimes tried to share with our non-Black friends, and they have refuted that narrative. They have said that that was one of victimhood, that was one of speculation. And Amy Cooper opened the door for the entire world to see it. And I think that there's something, to bring it back to the timing, let it not be lost on anyone that on the same day those two things happened. Because in both cases, it was the weaponization of white privilege that cost a Black man, whether it was his peace of mind while trying to just birdwatch, or a Black man his actual full life in front of others who were trying to even advocate for the perseverance of his spirit, right? I think I refuse to watch the recording of his murder. I can't take it in. I'm not taking in. I know people are calling it like murder porn or oppression porn. I'm just not going to participate because I know I don't have the bandwidth to. For those who, you know, were able to watch, like, I applaud them, because we must bear witness. Absolutely. We cannot let people suffer or die in vain ever. But I just know I couldn't emotionally do it. And so I didn't. And even the still pictures give me nightmares. Like, it's so traumatic. And what makes me sad and makes me cry, you know, in the morning and afternoon and at night, is that this country is 14% African American, or, you know, Black or African descendant. And the fact that there is another whole group of people who are not mourning like we are is what breaks my heart. Like, I think that the accurate word for it would be heartbroken, even more than angry. Is that it took this for our hurt to come to the surface, but we've been hurting for the last 450 years. And it's just kind of shocking that some people have been wholly and fully ignorant by choice at this point to the struggle of their fellow humans. Because those are the same people who are talking about all lives matter. Well, you're a human first, but that's not how you saw me. So now I'm a human?
I think what's interesting is how, there's so many interesting things about this, but, you know, I always say that I don't believe in coincidences, but funny enough, you know, this all happened last week, and this week, we just so happened to be focused on trauma in my monthly group session, Declutter the Mind, 5 Days to Spiritual Clarity, and I almost didn't think that I was going to have the bandwidth to talk about trauma, but I think that it is very timely and, you know, ironic that that topic was set from you know, a month ahead, you know. I love how putting the spiritual lens on something so negative and something so horrible can give you power and can give you an opportunity to give language to all the different emotions that rise up when you are in trauma. And even just looking at trauma from a spiritual sense of, it's simply disconnecting from the soul through pain, right? You are then disconnected from your light, your soul's nature, because of the circumstances that you've been put in. So when you pair that with the question, what can we do? What can you do to restore my light? You know, what can you do for everything that you did to take that away from me, to remove me from myself and the person that is uniquely me, the family that is uniquely mine, right? And the lands that are uniquely ours, you know? And I don't know what to say. I know that the people that are trying and that are aware and that are woke, I know that their intentions are good and their heart is in the right place. But what we have got to do for this trauma is we've got to all heal our trauma. You know, and thinking about the trauma, I can't help but to think about ancestry, right? Because we're talking about Black people in America in a place that was originally foreign to them, right? But when I have these sessions, these intuitive sessions, and we're opening up people's spiritual records, and you can ask about your soul purpose, and you can ask about your ancestry, you know, some of us can only inquire about our ancestry through spirituality at this point. We can only get the missing links for the information that is going to fill us up and make us whole through spirit, right? But it's funny that there's so many non-Black people that I work with that when you even say the word ancestry, they don't even have a frame of reference for what that really means,
mm-hmm.
right? My non-Black clients, my white clients are the ones that are never interested in the ancestry piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I always find it fascinating because no matter what type of human you are, ancestry is the key to moving us all forward.
Amen.
We have to know what has happened behind us so that we can know how to plan mm-hmm. for the steps that we must take in going forward. And what can be done at this point is we've got to support more Black and people of color, right? And there's a distinction there. And I keep going back to that because I think that we have to make that distinction in that there are Black people and there are people of color, and there is a racial divide between those two groups, right? But we have got to support more Black and people of color's spiritual journey. We've got to support their emotional clarity. And I know people are giving to these organizations. I think it's very important to support the bailout fund. I think it's very important to support any of the organizations that are going to be able to create these laws, you know, to dismantle this systemic racism, right? But we've also got to overcome this trauma because this trauma is the thing that affects us daily, even when we are in our homes, right? Even when we can't in the outside world. And I would love to be a part of helping to support people spiritually. I think it's so important that we are going in and bringing in more emotional clarity in these organizational conversations because obviously we needed that because look at Amy Cooper sitting up
That's
there
right.
as a VP making decisions
That's right.
and had her very real bias against a person for simply, you know, being asked to follow the rules, right? So I think that it's very important to support people have access, right? Because that's the biggest thing, one of the biggest things I think that this racism has done to us. It's denied us access to this, to that, to other things. The main reason that Black people are more susceptible to the coronavirus itself is because the life that they have lived, and I think Trevor Noah touched on this and said it very well, it's the life that we have lived as Black Americans in this country, which denies us access to very important things like good paying jobs with health insurance or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we've got to support not just mental health, but the emotional clarity. We've got to support the spiritual clarity. We've got to, you know, empower more Black women and people of color, women of color, in their businesses with intuitive strategy, with ways to have more buying power and have more choices, and so that people can be, you know, supportive, so that I can go somewhere and feel like I belong in this business because a Black person or a woman of color owns this, you know. There's so many people, and like I said, I've got love for all who have love for all. I'll keep saying that, but there's so many Black women that reach out to me, or women of color, and say, you know, I'm so happy, you know, that I can reach out to a light worker of color, you know, or someone that I can feel comfortable, that can see all of me and not just give me, you know, Pollyanna positivity, you know, and that's based on the experiences that they've had. That's very real, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's not as if, you know, one light worker is better than another light worker, but we need to be comfortable making our choices as well, right? So I think we got to give the people some action steps, right, Grace?
Hey, I love me a good action step. I surely do. Okay. I think you're hitting it, like, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head in regards to what these action steps need to be, right? Like, we were talking about this offline or off air, because we're technically still online. And I said, you know, back to what I said when I told my mom yesterday, I need my 33 cents. And not in like a I need a handout kind of way, but I need to be put in that. I need for the levers and pulleys to be pushed and pulled to then allow for me to get to equal footing. And I think that starts with in. Right? We can't get anywhere until we are clear, until we are balanced, until we are made whole, because then you will always come from a place of lack no matter where you go if you don't know who you are inside, right? That's why know thyself is paramount in every condition. And so some of the action steps that I'm a challenge people with, you know, because I am an entrepreneur. I do my own thing, but I also work, you know, for a company and a business. So my action step that I'm challenging or encouraging businesses to do is, if you are a business or an organization and you're having, you know, I've been calling it backdoor conversations with Black employees or employees of color, or you talking under the table, you need to take it to above the table. And it's to go above the fold, as they say in journalism, where the eye can see, right? And it needs to be focused on not just messages on social media, or not just really good adverts on social media and catchy videos. It needs to be steeped in action. My mama always said, your hands and your feet have got to capitalize on what your mouth said you were about to do. So our people's mouths are saying a lot of stuff, but now we can have our hands and our feet do the action piece of it. So I really challenge folks to reach out to Tanisha and I, specifically Tanisha, and get this emotional clarity for your team scheduled. You need to secure your team's ongoing development, and you know that you're going to need, quite frankly, outside of guidance and assistance beyond you. And you can email us at Tonesha@lifeofanempath.com, TONESHA@lifeofanempath.com. And let's talk about how we can really empower your employees to feel secure. This is the time to really make people feel heard. Once again, not in segregated groups of just the people who are feeling hurt, but in mixed company, so that we can see that our hurts are really being felt by all, and that we can understand that we show up every day as whole people to the workplace. Let us make sure that we heal whole people in the workplace, right? And so I think that for me is like number one.
Yeah. For sure. I think that's important. I think that we, in reaching out to our, you know, our Black friends and our friends of color, we know someone right now who needs support, who is struggling with the trauma, who maybe is in a city that is experiencing more protesting, more rioting, more looting, more violence than another city. Like, I want to encourage you guys to DM me at _lifeofanempath_ to nominate and support
by funding their clarity and guidance in these unprecedented times, right? If you know somebody that wants to get help, but they don't have the resources to be able to do that, then let them be able to explore their options. Give them access to something that is going to help them further their journey, you know, spiritually, you know, in their business. I have things, you know, guidance is relevant to everything, right? Spirit is for every situation that you have in this life. So whether they're an entrepreneur that needs intuitive strategy, right, and they're struggling in their business because of COVID-19 or just need direction, or whether they're struggling personally, you guys can also just donate, right? Maybe you don't have a specific person that you want to nominate or that you're thinking of, or maybe you don't want to be too forward, even though this is the time to be forward, right? You can send us a Cash App at $MYNYSYLLA, so that's $MYSYLLA, to donate to offering either a Black or a person of color intuitive strategy, intuitive coaching, intuitive guidance, support for as long as they need to, right? And we also want to talk to people that have stories, right? Like Race put it all on me, but we want to be able to highlight women of color and Black people on this podcast. So if you have something that you want to share, you've been impacted by this, or you want to give voice to your experience, we'd love to hear from you as well, right? So I really appreciate you tuning in and spending time with us today on this very important topic. This was not planned, but we would have been very remiss not to comment, share our thoughts, share our hearts, share our spirit with what's going on, because we know that we have people listening. We have people waiting on us for season two. Season two is coming very soon, right?
That's the word in the street.
Season two is coming. So hopefully this will tie you over until we are able to release episodes for our next season. But stay safe out there. You guys stay safe. You guys stay in practice, stay in meditation, stay in prayer, stay in action though, right? Like, we've got to make sure that we are taking action in our trauma, that we are taking action in getting clarity and getting to a higher place. So thank you so much again, Grace, for joining. I did say we had to do this, so thank you for joining. And thank you to all of our listeners. And I look forward to these DMs and these emails going off, right? You want to know what you can do? Sound off in the DMs, send that Cash App, and you will definitely be provided with updates on who we're helping, how we're helping, and the whole journey. I can't wait to see how we can get people to show up for spirituality in the time that we need it the most. Take care, you guys. Talk soon.
Bye.